Good morning, everyone. Is it okay to hear from them? So first of all, I'd like to thank the organizer to invite me to come to this audience, because I typically go to, I'm a basic researcher, so I go to experimental biology to present my data there. And of course, you know, I think my study, nutritional epigenetic effect in early life, actually has, you know, significant impact to public health. So, like Nico mentioned, I have roughly, you know, 40% research, 40% teaching. It's hard for me to actually leave my teaching because the economic situation here. I'm teaching a senior level nutritional biochemistry class with almost 80 students without teaching assistant there. So you can imagine why I say I need to go to a meeting. My department has said, no, you're not going. But I say, you know, I'm not just going to a meeting. I'm going to this annual meeting related to public health. And she said, well, yes, you go. Anyway, so I like to see whether I can actually make you know, this issue a little bit clear to everybody here. Dietary choice basically is a cornerstone for pregnancy nutrition. We know that if you have a good choice during pregnancy, potentially you have a healthy baby, and maybe they become an athlete in the future. So just, you know, I think that's every mom's hope. So in my lab, research-wise, we'll focus on, you know, two things. First of all, we're looking to how early life nutrition regulates gene expression. Okay, that's a typical, you know, nutrient gene interaction case. And the more importantly, we look into how this regulated gene expression potentially affect developmental programming of obesity-related disease, which, you know, Nico already showed earlier that with, you know, time, you know, you see increased obesity, diabetes, just potentially not related to genetic change at all. Okay, so this is one of the questions people are always interested to know. Why do certain people, you know, develop certain diseases, or others remain healthy? And what I see, the healthy outcome basically is a dynamic gene regulation and expression controlled by genetic susceptibility, development susceptibility, and on top of that, you have a environmental conditions such as, you know, obesity, such as nutrition and the other environmental chemical exposure there. And when you look at the developmental susceptibility, we see these five critical windows that you can increase the susceptibility, potentially contribute to gene regulation expression, and eventually contribute to health outcome. So for us, we basically look maternal diet as a major regulator of gene expression to control health and disease. This is our central hypothesis related to early life programming. We basically consider this is a clinical example of nutrient gene interaction. And if you look at the mom's lifestyle, nutrition, environmental exposure will have epigenetic modifications through development. And that modification will basically have a developmental adaptation in both fetus and placenta. If you look at the basically, the adaptation will have a programmed phenotype. And if the programmed phenotype through this whole process match to the postnatal environment, we don't know, you know, how that match happened yet, you actually have a normal response in body structure function, and you, of course, have a health, you know, status in the future. However, if the programmed phenotype and the postnatal environment has a mismatch, you actually see the impaired body structure and function and potentially develop this disease status. So there's some maternal high-fat consequence already reported by numerous studies. For immediate consequence, we see there's a larger than gestation or smaller than gestation babies. and obesity and hypertension associated with that. And of course, more recently, the report of fatty liver disease related to maternal high-fat diet and food, you know, intake regulation, one of the things potentially also programmed by maternal high-fat diet. And we see the increase of diabetes through time, and potentially that's because increased insulin resistance and glucose tolerance impaired by maternal diet. And more recently, you see even offspring behavior, emotion also affected by maternal high-fat diet. For us, we're mostly focused on this part, how maternal high-fat diet can potentially impair glucose tolerance and insulin resistance. So first, our goal is to try to see, will maternal high-fat diet during pregnancy exchange offspring blood glucose regulation at birth. This is our animal model. We give two types of diet to pregnant rats. First is a control diet with 16% of fat coming from, of 16% of energy coming from fat, and also a high-fat diet with 45% energy coming from fat. And this just during gestation period. And the end of gestation, we did C-section and get the both fetus and the placenta out to look at it. First, we look at the birth weight from pups with a maternal high-fat diet. You see the significant increase of birth weight, which matched to the you know, study reported by other people. And more importantly, when we look at birth, the neonatal blood glucose compared to control, the high-fat pups has almost twice high blood glucose in circulation. So when we look at the, okay, is this because actually mom has a irregularity in their, you know, blood glucose? This is blood glucose from them. And we see pretty much no, at least the statistical significance when you compare the control, when you look at the high-fat them. And also we look at the, one of the glucose transporter, GLUT1 mRNA expression in placenta, we didn't see any significant change at all. Okay, so we conclude that maternal plasma glucose is not responsible for increase in glucose from neonatal pups. So what is the reason that we actually see the increased blood glucose in neonatal? Gluconeogenesis in liver is one of the process that our body can produce blood glucose from precursor other than carbohydrate. So we look at this process. One of the gene in this process, PEPCK or PCK for gene, is one of the rate limiting enzyme control the whole process. If you look at the animal model, when you see this gene overexpressed, you see hypoglycemia and type 2 diabetes. And also, if you silence this gene in diabetic mice, you see improved glucose control and elevated insulin resistance. So this is one of the genes we think potentially may impact, you know, neonatal blood glucose increase in our high-fat pups. Okay, so we look into pretty much all the genes related to the pathway G6 phosphatase, CEBP beta, CEBP alpha, SFRP, SREBP1A, and PGC1A. All these genes or enzymes relate to the gluconeogenesis pathway. And this is the mRNA content of these genes, which we can see on a maternal high-fat diet. This is in pups liver. Almost all the genes relate to gluconeogenesis increased significantly. And when we look at this rate-limiting enzyme, PCK, not only the mRNA content increased by 3-5-fold, also the transcription rate indicates these genes transcription regulated also increased by 3-4-fold. Okay, so What is the reason we actually see that change here? Before we go to that, you know, I like to use this example as obvious sign you see how maternal diet actually regulate epigenome. This is a well-reported study that's showing you actually see a range of, you know, coat color in mice. So what is the base for this difference? Potentially they could from different parents, maybe the age difference, or maybe the mutation in all the pigment causing genes. However, let me tell you, all these genes, all these mice are genetically identical. Okay, the only difference here is they are epigenetically regulated. So if you look at the study published, you know, a few years ago, that maternal diet actually modifies the epigenome. That modification actually changed the coat color. So that indicates maternal diet actually play a significant role in how the fetal gene is shaped. So when you look at the epigenetic process, either demethylation, histomodification, or RNA-mediated regulation, you always see these three processes involved. That's a writing process, erasing process, and the reading process. All these three processes actually regulated by different enzymes there. I'm not going to talk too much into those enzymes, but I will give you example here to show that regulation of gene expression actually reflects at the chromatin level. Okay, this is a typical chromatin with you know, histone here, and wrapped around the DNA, and in active transcription state, you see the what they call the active open chromatin here with transcription factor binding to the gene and also transcription machinery bind to it. In an inactive or condensed mode, you see the all the nucleosome basically packed together so that no longer you have access to the basic transcription machinery, so the gene basically decrease the regulation, decrease the expression. To give you a close look into the nucleosome, which is a basic unit for chromatin, this basically is a 146 base pair DNA wrapped around the histone protein there. Okay, so the any regulation happened on this histone tail will change the interaction between DNA and histone protein. And you see that all kinds of modification happened on this little tail sticking out there, and all these modification potentially either increase the binding between DNA and the protein, histone protein, or decrease that. And with the decrease and increase of interaction between histone and the DNA, you actually either increase or decrease the transcription. So when you see the modification happen, basically you change the chromatin from an inactive structure to a more loose, open structure so the transcription machinery can bind to it so that you increase the gene expression. So we hypothesis in our case that altered histone modification associated with neonatal hepatic PCK expression in rats. So this basically give you what's happening there. Okay, so these two on the left side give you, this is a reminder for everybody that this is a gene expression on PCK. You see the increase. And this pretty much the histone modification potentially affect the gene expression. Okay, histone 3 acetylation, 4 acetylation, and histone 3 K4 methylation all potentially open the chromatin structure, increase the transcription. And the histone 3 lysine 9, 27 trimethylation cause a condensation of chromatin and decrease the gene expression. So when we look at the histone modification here on PCK. Okay, this top is a gene structure, show you the promoter region, which is located here, and the coding region is inside the gene body. Okay, if you look at that, we observe that histone 4 acetylation in pups with a high protein diet, significant increase in the coding region. We also see the histone 3 K4 methylation in the coding region increase. And if you look at the modification that affect the condensation, both histone 3 K9 and K27 in the promoter region, you see the decrease, and also K9 in the coding region decrease, indicate you have an open chromatin and PCK gene when mom has a high-fat diet. Okay, so that contributes the increase of gene expression there. Okay, I want you to remember this regulation here, because when you look at the next one, you will see why it's relevant. Okay, when you look at this part, we conclude that a maternal high-fat diet basically resulting in elevated glucose in newborn and potentially through regulate gluconeogenesis and the increased mRNA content of all these genes relate to the maternal high-fat diet. And at least we conclude that increase of PCK through histone modification there. So second goal, of course, we already see if pups has a maternal high-fat diet during gestation, will you change the diet, actually change the modification? So, you know, sometimes it's hard to change the dietary habit, sometimes not by choice. So this is our design that in this case, we give mom either a control diet or high-fat diet through gestation lactation, just like we did before. But after weaning, we give pups only the control diet. So this, you know, these 4 months, or both pups from a control diet or a high-fat mom diet, or on a control diet. Okay, then we look at the histone modification in offspring. Okay, this actually show you what happened in male pups. Okay, this is only male pups. If you look at all the histone modification related to gene activation, the histone 4 acetylation increase still stay there. However, you no longer see the histone 3 K4 methylation increase, which we see earlier in neonatal pups. What we see here is if male pups eat a control diet, which, you know, according to at least the animal, that's a healthy growth diet for them, we actually see in male pups the decrease on histone 9, okay, no longer there. Okay. However, we see the increase K27 increase at both promoter and the coding region. If you remember K27, which is a modification related to condensation of the chromatin, right? So the increase of this histone modification will indicate what? So this is a PCK gene expression. Okay, so we actually see in male pups, if we give them a healthy growth diet after weaning, you actually change the histone modification programmed by maternal high-fat diet, and then they no longer had increased PCK expression. This is what happened in female pups. Okay, so first of all, we actually see the increased polymerase 2 binding to the promoter region, which is a sign indicate potentially there's an increased gene expression. Okay, so when we look into, which is not case for this, okay, in male, we didn't see that. Okay, so in the modification related to open the chromatin, increase the gene expression, we actually see the histone 4 acetylation increase no longer there, but one of these modifications, histone 3, K4, trimethylation, dimethylation still increase, which is matched to what happened at day zero. Even worse, when we look at all the modification related to relate to the shutting down the transcription and the cause of condensation, we actually see the K9 trimethylation, which we observed at day zero, decrease still stays. Okay, so in female, we actually see this modification happened at day zero, and this modification happened at day zero, cause the increase of PCK expression stays even they are on a healthy growth diet for 4 months. Okay, what's your prediction for this? Okay, you actually see in female, PCK expression, because the diet couldn't change that modification caused by maternal high-fat diet. So the PCK expression actually stayed just like day zero. Okay, so I'm not sure this relates to Nico's presentation that maternal diet somehow relate to granddaughter's transgenerational events, but we actually see if you change diet, only change in female, not in male. Only change in male, not in female. Females keep the epigenetic modification mom programmed. Okay, so we conclude that even you improve post-weaning diet, you only affect mRNA content in a gender-specific manner, and in this case, female keep the elevated PCK expression because the modification caused by maternal high-fat diet actually stays. So far we actually see maternal high-fat diet modify the epigenome in fetus, and which may have long lasting consequence. I want to share some of the genome-wise data with you so you can see this not only happened to glucose regulation, potentially happened to a lot of different things. So the graph I show you here is on the chromosome number 9, which is PCK gene located in rat. The top show you the DNA methylation pattern in the control pups, and the bottom show you from a maternal high-fat diet. Okay, the intensity here, density here showing how much DNA methylation there. Okay, if you look at this just roughly, you see there's a significant decrease on DNA methylation on some of the genes. Okay, what we see, maternal high-fat diet basically cause what I call the global hypomethylation. Okay, this is actually in liver, so there's a lot of decrease of DNA methylation there. So what is the impact of that decreased DNA methylation? I give you this as an example with a maternal environment, okay, with you know, specific focus on liver at this point. With that environment, you cause a chromatin modification that potentially some of the gene less activated in normal condition now become more activated. Okay, those abnormal activation potential will have long-lasting consequence. So, you know, instead of getting healthy pups from this mom, we actually see pups actually grow into a couch potato type of mouse. And, you know, instead of having a potential athlete here, we may see the increase of even childhood obesity here in this case. Okay, so most of our data I present today are done by my graduate student here, and you know, I also have a very active undergraduate student population in my lab, and all these are my collaborators in the university or outside, and my research funded by NIH, USD, campus, and NESDE. I'd like to thank the organizer again for inviting me to present our data here, and I'd like to also answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much for the very interesting presentation. And maybe you saw something in some of the slides. You have this ocean of data. You have these spikes. And the art to make out of these data spikes reasonable and understandable products. Kind of like if you have a garden, you're planting the seed and then the data is in there, and then you have plants and trees and flowers coming out. And we saw now some of the flowers and the trees. Maybe one more message that we have here, and then I just think already of some questions, and probably you have some, and you really want to get to it and want to ask him some questions. I think one message that we can see, very simple one, very simplified one, is sex and diet matters.
Yep.
even then, there are differences between males and females in rats here, that we saw here, but probably from what we saw with the Urbacalix study, probably in humans too. Sure. So there are different mechanisms that might have different repercussions in the next and the over next generation.
Yep.
And but what I found also interesting, what you showed, was that even if they had a high-fat diet, if they were fed with a normal, good, healthy rat diet, there were some reversions being seen in the expression.
Yep.
And that maybe you can also say something to that. On the applications of that.
In real life, you know, people always ask, you know, the question, you know, what, you know, should be eating, you know, it's really complicated, you know. I'm not sure even you can, you know, for rat it's easy. What we do, you know, we have a very controlled environment. We can say, okay, you know, maybe we should give them just a normal diet for, you know, male rats and some other type of, you know, diet for female rats. I think, you know, the story I want to tell here is you have to be cautious when you, you know, make a dietary choice during pregnancy and even lactation period, because, you know, if you ask a clinician, one of the things people, you know, actually probably dietitians suggest for a pregnant woman has a gestational diabetes, you know, increase the fat content, probably is one of the common practice in, you know, if you want to increase energy. And also I remember when we first published that story in Journal of Physiology last year, you know, the online comments, one of the person say, well, you know, when I was like 8 or 9 months pregnant, my doctor say, well, you know, your baby is still small. You need to put up at least, 10, 20 more pounds there. And, you know, what she did is just keep on eating fat. You know, she was worried maybe a daughter will have, the future diabetes. We never know, but that is something I think it's real and it's happening. We just don't know enough yet.
Thank you. I mean, yeah. that's actually, that goes back to real life. And then as practitioners and in public health, you wonder what's happening. Some of the questions from the audience.
What do you mean high in simple sugars? I think one of the group in Auckland, New Zealand, their study, have a focus on how increase, fructose, those kind of, also. I think that the data, I don't remember the epigenetic part. I think that, data is there, suggests that if you increase simple sugar, for example, fructose intake during pregnancy, you will have the consequence potentially increase, fatty liver disease and other conditions.
One more question? Too much choice. Maybe on this side, in red.
It's a good question. I think if you look at what happened in a high-fat diet, you actually have a oversupply of lipid or fat, dietary fat in circulation. That probably contribute to a lot of glycerol in available for gluconeogenesis, and those glycerol actually will end up upstream of gluconeogenesis pathway that potentially will have very little impact to you go to other pathway. But that's a good question. We haven't looked at any other pathway to see how other pathways modified by this diet. Yeah.
Thanks so much. And thanks again for this excellent presentation.